The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up from governmentjobs.com, teacher of the visually impaired, description of work for the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. This is a re-advertisement. Previous applicants are still under consideration and do not need to reapply. The mission of the Department of Public Instruction is charged with implementing the state's public school laws for pre-kindergarten through 12th grade public schools at the direction of the State Superintendent of Public Instruction and State Board of Education. The North Carolina Department of Public Instruction is seeking applicants for a school educator class 2, working title Teacher of the Visually Impaired. For our Office of Exceptional Children Sensory Support and Assistive Technology Section, Early Learning Sensory Support Program. The Office of Exceptional Children provides general supervision, professional learning, and technical assistance to all local education agencies, including charter schools, state-operated programs, the Innovative School District, lab schools, and other state agencies and approved private agencies that provide special education to children and youth classified as disabled. The Early Learning Sensory Support Program for Children with Hearing and Vision Impairments, ELSSP. Within the SSAT section is a statewide early intervention slash educational program supporting young children, their families, and the providers who work with them through the provision of direct instruction and consultation. The primary purpose of the position is to provide itinerant early intervention and education services to children eligible to receive special education and related services for vision loss under Parts C and B of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA. The position primarily serves children ages birth to 5 years, but can be expanded based on need and capacity. The position is required to serve children in their home, daycare, and/or public school. This position is remote-based and requires up to 90% travel and will be supporting Districts 3/North Central NC. This position requires access to reliable internet in order to conduct business using web-based platforms. Note, to receive credit for your work history and credentials, you must list the information on the State of North Carolina application in the Education and Work Experience sections of the application form. Any information omitted from the application cannot be considered for qualifying credit. NCDPI welcomes attached or incorporated resumes, cover letters, and reference information, but these items will not be used for screening for qualifying credit. Please make sure the application is completed in full. See resume or see attachment will not be accepted. EEO statement. The State of North Carolina and the Department of Public Instruction provides equal employment opportunities to all employees and applicants for employment and prohibits discrimination and harassment of any type without regard to race, color, religion, age, sex, national origin, disability status, genetics, protected veteran status, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, or any other characteristic protected by federal, state, or local laws. This policy applies to all terms and conditions of employment, including recruiting, hiring, placement, promotion, termination, layoff, recall, transfer, leaves of absence, and compensation and training. Knowledge, skills, and abilities slash competencies. Documented experience in public education teaching children birth to 2 and or 3 to 21. Documented experience with federal and or state special education policies, practices and or procedures, for example, IDEA Parts B and or C. Demonstrated experience utilizing and or managing web-based applications and or databases, for example, Microsoft Office software, Google, Apple software. Minimum education and experience requirements. Some state job postings say you can qualify by an equivalent combination of education and experience. If that language appears below, then you may qualify through either years of education or years of directly related experience, or a combination of both. See osHR.nc.gov/experience-guide for details. master's degree from an accredited college or university in one of the following fields: special education, birth to kindergarten education, early childhood education, visual impairment education, psychology, or other related fields, and a North Carolina teaching license in the area of special education / visual impairment, or the qualifications to obtain license to teach in North Carolina. Salary is based on experience and education of the applicant. Supplemental and contact information. All applicants must complete and submit a state application for employment using the NEOGOV online job application system. Job opportunities hot link, sorted by job title ascending, careers.governmentjobs.com for the state of North Carolina. Any applications not received by the advertisement closing date and time will not be accepted outside of the portal. To receive credit for work history and credentials, the applicant must list the information on the online application form. We already read that at the beginning. Please make sure the application is completed in full. Already read that part too. Other attachments except a DD-214 copy will also be accepted but will not be used in screening for qualifying credit. Applicants are required to scan and attach a copy of their DD-214, Form 4, or Certificate of Release or Discharge from Active Duty, or discharge orders if they wish to obtain veterans preference. Reference checks will be performed on all selected candidates. If the position requires a background check and or a drug screening, that will also be performed on all selected candidates. Applicants may be subject to a criminal background check. All candidates selected for positions considered positions of trust will be subject to a criminal background check. To check status of an application, please log in to your NC Government Job Opportunities account and click Application Status. For technical issues with your application, please call the NeoGov Help Line at 877-204-4442. If you have a technical issue with your government jobs account, please call their helpline at 1-855-524-5627. Note, applicants will be communicated with via email only for updates on the status of their application or any questions on their application. For inquiries, please send questions to Valerie.Richardson, that's with an O-N, at dpi.nc.gov. If there are any questions about this posting other than your application status, please contact NC Department of Public Instruction Human Resources. And applications for positions requiring specific coursework must be accompanied by a copy of the applicant's transcript. Applicants with degrees not conferred by a United States college or university must attach verification that their degree is equivalent to a similar degree from a U.S. institution. The Office of State Human Resources uses the National Association of Credential Evaluation Services, NACES, as a referral resource for applicants who need to have their credentials certified as equivalent. For a list of organizations that perform this specialized service, please visit the NACES membership website at http://www.naces.org/members.htm. Transcripts, degree evaluations, and cover letters may be uploaded with your application. From the August 29th NNO, article by Virginia Bridges, newsobserver.com. Child sex abuse survivors say institutions that employed predators betrayed them too. A former dance student at the UNC School of the Arts and a plaintiff in the proposed class action lawsuit against the school details the long-term damage done to his life from alleged sexual abuse during the mid-1980s. UNC School of the Arts sex abuse claims. Alumni say they were sexually abused while students at the UNC School of the Arts. A Charlotte Observer and News and Observer investigation found no evidence that the campus aggressively investigated similar claims when it had the chance. Here is ongoing coverage of the situation. As North Carolina slipped into the first day of 2020, a new law opened what once were locked courthouse doors to people who endured sexual abuse at church, school, or anywhere while growing up in North Carolina. Hundreds of childhood sex abuse survivors seized the opportunity and filed civil lawsuits filled with tragic stories of religious leaders, coaches, and club volunteers grooming, groping, or raping them. Many accused organizations that should have protected them of turning a blind eye or worse, trying to keep reports of abuse hidden. many of the suits accused organization. Okay. There's a term for that behavior. It's called institutional betrayal, and it can often exacerbate harm for those who have suffered abuse, said Jennifer Freyd, F-R-E-Y-D, a psychologist and a researcher who created the institutional betrayal theory. The lawsuits, made possible due to the Safe Child Act opening a 2-year window allowing previously barred claims, exposed many such betrayals in North Carolina, said Sky David, S-K-Y-E-D-A-V-I-D, an attorney for the North Carolina Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Many people have failed these child survivors of abuse with layers of cover-up, and it impacted all corners of the state, David said in an email. Despite a legal limbo for many cases caused by constitutional challenges to the Safe Child Act, the legislation improved the environment for children across the state, attorneys and experts say. It's led to publicity on patterns of abuse, settlements with plaintiffs, and conversations about mandatory reporting and best practices, they say. Knowing that not reporting is a crime should be enough to make institutions change, and I hope that it is affecting that change, David wrote. The more than 250 lawsuits make plain what institutions should look for to protect children, such as employees or volunteers spending too much time with children or taking them home, said Bobby Jenkins, a Greensboro attorney who represents some Safe Child Act plaintiffs. It puts the onus on institutions to be more diligent, Jenkins said. About the Safe Child Act, in 2019, the General Assembly unanimously passed landmark legislation that sought to recognize challenges that young sex abuse victims face in coming forward quickly enough to not be shot down by statutes of limitations. The law, which followed a national trend of recognizing delayed child abuse reporting, temporarily allowed victims of child sexual abuse here to file civil lawsuits against abusers and institutions that enabled them. The lawsuits could be filed regardless of how long ago the assaults occurred. The Safe Child Act also made permanent changes. It extended the deadline by which people can file claims from age 21 to age 28. It also allowed civil lawsuits filed within 2 years of a criminal conviction for a felony sexual offense against someone under the age of 18. From 1st of January 2020 to December 31, 2021, hundreds of people filed and joined lawsuits. Defendants included churches, camps, schools, and many more organizations that employed people who plaintiffs accused of abusing children and teens, trauma that can send some down a path of depression and drug abuse. Many of those suits are in legal limbo due to legal challenges against allowing individuals to file lawsuits that were previously barred by the statute of limitations. Arguments for and against are scheduled to be heard before the North Carolina Supreme Court on September 18th. I think they meant to strike will and include are scheduled to be. Even if many get struck down, they will have a lasting impact, say supporters of the law. For one, the stories of abuse in the 250 cases filed support research finding it can take people decades to understand they were abused, Jenkins said. There were more lessons, said State Attorney General Joss Stein, whose office drafted and has defended the law. We learned that too often the unthinkable happens in the places we thought our children would be safe, Stein said in a statement. Critics of Safe Child Act. Critics of the law, including defendants challenging lawsuits, say the legislation doesn't remedy a wrong. Instead, it harms organizations trying to help children today and floods courts with emotionally charged, decades-old claims. However well-intentioned the legislature may have been, the attempt to revive long-barred claims plainly violates the North Carolina Constitution and would have devastating effects on the people and organizations in this state. Elizabeth Troutman, an attorney representing the Gaston County Board of Education, wrote in a court filing. That board is facing a Safe Child Act lawsuit contending school officials didn't take action to stop a wrestling coach from physically and sexually assaulting his players in the 1990s and 2000s. And it is among the organizations challenging both the law and naming organizations as plaintiffs in lawsuits. What is institutional betrayal? Institutional betrayal occurs when an organization harms those dependent on it, said Freyd, who's founded the Nonprofit Center for Institutional Courage. This can be explicit harm, such as a government ordering genocide, but it often takes the form of a failure to protect or respond well when there has been some sort of abuse at an institution. In many cases, victims may be unable to grapple with the trauma until years later, Freid said, describing what she calls betrayal blindness. The antidote is institutional courage, in which institutions pledge to protect those who depend on them, despite unpleasantness, risk, and short-term costs, according to Freid's research at the Center for Institutional Courage, which studies institutional betrayal and related solutions. State laws and policies can hold institutions accountable, but they could also reward organizations when they take proactive steps to protect problematic behaviors, Freid said. Many organizations have made changes to better protect children. The Catholic Diocese of Charlotte started protective protocols and practices more than 20 years ago to prevent child abuse and increase accountability, according to Liz Chandler, a diocese spokesperson. Those practices include mandatory training for all clergy, a reporting hotline, and annual compliance audits, she wrote in an emailed response to questions. Virginia Bridges covers criminal justice in the Triangle and across North Carolina for the News and Observer. Her work is produced with financial support from the nonprofit The Just Trust. The NNO maintains full editorial control of its journalism. The story was originally published August 29, 2024. From CarolinaPublicPress.org, federal lawsuit says Moore County DSS unlawfully institutionalized children. Disability Rights NC lawsuit against Moore County says social services violated rights of a cancer patient and her two children with disabilities. Article by Lucas Thome, T-H-O-M-A-E, published August 22nd. A federal lawsuit filed 2 weeks ago by advocacy group Disability Rights NC alleges that Moore County Department of Social Services unlawfully institutionalized two children while their mother was being treated for cancer. According to the complaint, VAS resident Rumina Slazas, S-L-A-Z-A-S, was hospitalized for cancer in July 2022. A month later, Moore County DSS took custody of her 14-year-old son and 13-year-old daughter, both of whom have significant intellectual disabilities. They are referred to as J.S. and S.S. in the court filings. Slazas, J.S., and S.S. are the plaintiffs in the case, and Moore County is named as the defendant. The lawsuit claims Moore County refused to return the children to Slazas weeks after the county took custody of them, despite having a written opinion from Slazas' health care providers declaring that she was in complete remission. The lawsuit also alleges that in August 2022, Moore County DSS dropped Slazas' nonverbal daughter off at a UNC Health's pediatric emergency department for aggressive behaviors and refused to pick her up after she was discharged, forcing her to remain in limbo at the clinic for nearly 9 months, while the county sought a placement for her at a psychiatric facility. Both siblings were eventually reunited with their mother in 2023, but not before the county sent them to separate institutional settings rather than seeking community-based services for them. The lawsuit also argues that in doing so, Moore County violated well-settled disability law established by the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, and landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision Olmstead v. L.C. Throughout the defendant's custody of J.S. and S.S., defendant ignored information from medical and disability services professionals about the services and supports appropriate for plaintiff children and about plaintiff mother's recovery from cancer, the complaint reads. Defendant acted with deliberate indifference to plaintiff's rights under the ADA and with disregard for the children's long-term well-being by institutionalizing them and unreasonably delaying their return to their mother. Slazas did not make herself available for an interview, although Disability Rights NC attorney Holly Stiles told Carolina Public Press that she may choose to speak about her case against Moore County at a later date. CPP submitted a records request to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services on Monday for all correspondence with Rumina Slazas, Disability Rights NC, or county officials related to the custody situation dating back to 2022. DHHS acknowledged the request, but no records have been received prior to publication of the article. What is the Olmstead decision? In 1999, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that in accordance with the integration mandate of the ADA, public entities must provide community-based services to persons with disabilities as long as such services are appropriate. The affected persons do not oppose community-based treatment, and those services can be reasonably accommodated. Disability rights activists consider Olmstead one of the most important civil rights rulings in the country's history, as it marked a significant step toward ending the widespread institutionalization of people with disabilities. In response to the ruling, North Carolina created an Olmstead plan that laid out how it planned to move away from institutional care facilities and toward community-based treatment. Disability Rights NC CEO Virginia Knowlton Marcus, M-A-R-C-U-S, said in a statement on the 25th anniversary of the Olmstead early this summer that North Carolina's plan lacks ambition, imagination, and investment. The Olmstead ruling has been the basis for several lawsuits against public entities in North Carolina over the past 25 years. Stiles told CPP that Disability Rights NC has a track record of successful Olmstead lawsuits, and more are currently making their way through the court system. One federal lawsuit filed by the organization in April argues that North Carolina violates the rights of disabled pretrial detainees in state jails by failing to ensure timely evaluations and treatment for them. Another filed in December 2022 against North Carolina DHHS Director Cody Kinsley, K-I-N-S-L-E-Y, takes aim at the practice of sending disabled children in foster care to psychiatric residential treatment facilities. Next steps unclear in lawsuit against Moore County. Several Moore County officials, including DSS Director David Richmond, declined to comment on the lawsuit. Mary Craven Adams, the independent attorney representing Moore County in the case, told CPP that she could not speak on the substance of the case because the county had not been served with the lawsuit yet as of Tuesday. After the county is served and a response filed on behalf of the county, more information will be available in the federal court filings, Adams said in an email. In many cases like this, a county that is sued may file a motion to dismiss. If Moore County does that, it would be ruled on by U.S. District Judge Thomas Schroeder, S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R. Such an action could delay further proceedings by months or longer. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may republish our stories for free online or in print. Simply copy and paste the article contents from the box below. Note, some images and interactive features may not be included here. From BeMyEyes.com, Be My Eyes to acquire AppleViz, to secure its future and to invest for growth. San Francisco, August 28, 2024. Be My Eyes, the award-winning company that provides visual access for blind and low-vision people through AI, volunteers, and organizations anywhere in the world, announced today that it is acquiring AppleViz, the go-to online blindness website for accessibility advice on Apple and other technologies. The future of AppleViz, a much-loved online community with its active and engaged user base and vast resource of podcasts, forums, and reviews, looked bleak when its founder, David Goodwin, announced in July that it would need to close permanently at the end of August 2024. But following a fervent chorus of community wishes and support, Be My Eyes announced today that it will acquire AppleViz to ensure the website's long-term stability and growth. David Goodwin built something remarkable and immensely valuable, and when Be My Eyes team discussed the possible closure, we quickly concluded that we had to do something to keep such an important and loved community resource available, said Mike Buckley, CEO of Be My Eyes. From the first call with the AppleViz team, we not only learned that we shared the same values and mission, but that we also had similar ideas for how to grow AppleViz and make it even more useful in the future. As always, we will listen and learn first, and then continue to build AppleViz with the direct input and leadership of the blind and low vision community. Under the terms of the acquisition, Be My Eyes will acquire the website and brand and a license to all content. Be My Eyes has also agreed to ensure complete editorial independence for the AppleViz team and contributors going forward. It will also add 2 paid staff positions and retain key AppleViz volunteers under the new structure to ensure continuity and maintain its institutional knowledge. To retain the editorial authenticity for the blind and low vision community, the new AppleViz organization will report directly to Brian Bashin, B-A-S-H-I-N, vice chairman of the Be My Eyes. Bashin, himself blind, has been a former science journalist, commissioner for the U.S. Ability One Commission, and former CEO of the San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind. AppleViz is undoubtedly a must-have resource for people who are blind or have low vision. I, for one, have used the site and listened to its podcasts on countless occasions, commented Brian Bashin, vice chair of Be My Eyes. Their intra community forum, technology reviews, guides, advice, awards, report cards, and active discussions, combined with our own giant user community, makes a powerful voice that is certainly greater than the sum of its parts. And like all Be My Eyes user features, AppleViz will continue to be free of charge for all of its users. The acquisition closed today with the plan of ensuring the site remains available as read-only to the community and then restoring full functionality on September 9th or before, in time for analysis of Apple's fall software releases. By then, all the traditional AppleViz content relevant to such upcoming releases as iOS 18 and macOS Sequoia, including articles detailing what's new for blind and deafblind users, podcast episodes, and blog posts detailing new and resolved voiceover bugs in the respective updates, will be there as usual. 14 years ago, I, along with several others, set out to make AppleViz the go-to online resource for individuals who are blind or have low vision who wanted to learn more about accessible technologies. We did that and so much more. But sadly, for several unavoidable reasons, we had to announce in July the impending closure of AppleViz, said David Goodwin, founder of AppleViz. But following the subsequent outpouring of support, we just knew we needed to find a way to keep AppleViz going. Partnering with such a globally trusted and valued technology partner as Be My Eyes could not have been a better outcome, and I look forward to the ongoing growth and evolution of AppleViz under their stewardship. About Be My Eyes. Launched in 2015, Be My Eyes is a globally recognized and award-winning access technology provider for people who are blind or have low vision. With a worldwide community of nearly 700,000 users and 7.5 million volunteers, Be My Eyes connects blind and low vision users with sighted volunteers and companies through live video and AI to tackle the inaccessible parts of everyday life, whether at home or at work, all for free to the end user. Be My Eyes is available in more than 150 countries worldwide, and its volunteers speak more than 180 languages. To learn more, please visit BeMyEyes.com or join us on LinkedIn, X, Facebook, Instagram, Mastodon, Threads, and TikTok. About AppleViz. AppleViz, launched on July 16, 2010, is a vibrant online community and invaluable resource dedicated to supporting blind and low vision users of Apple products. It offers a wealth of content, including detailed app reviews, comprehensive guides, active forums, and engaging podcasts, all focused on Apple's accessibility features such as VoiceOver. The platform not only helps users navigate and utilize Apple technology effectively, but also fosters a sense of community and collaboration. Through its advocacy and feedback to developers, AppleViz has played a crucial role in enhancing the accessibility of Apple products, making technology more inclusive for everyone. To learn more, please visit AppleViz.com or join us on Mastodon, X, and Facebook. I hope you enjoyed this week's reading of Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.